Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
I want to introduce you to a good cop. This is Emily Kopp, investigative reporter, who covers the origins of COVID-19 as well as biosafety. Okay. And her investigative work has been featured in major national publications as well. Of course, you know her from the Daily Caller. But as we talk about COVID 5 years later, what we've learned and what we now know, and we certainly wish we knew then what we know now. But what Emily Kopp is investigating is, you know, the ties of those championing the status quo at NIH. One of her latest pieces. Want to welcome in Emily Kopp. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Dawn. Great to be with you.
Absolutely. Take me through, if you would, Emily, your latest piece, you know, with the Daily Caller News Foundation, as you do this investigative work, and it's so important. I mean, people, seriously, investigative work in general, transparency, it's all important. But on this one, it's obviously emotional for people. Everybody lost somebody. Everybody had a grandparent, a loved one in a hospital, a nursing home, kids banned from schools, people losing jobs. We want answers. And Emily Kopp is trying to unveil what really happened during COVID and as well at our government levels. And I would say to you, Emily, what you're doing in many parts is restoring trust, because that's what we need. We need the investigations. We need the transparency so that we can begin to trust our institutions once again. So you can you take us through, if you would, your investigation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thank you for your kind words and for touching on that. You know, at this point, I've devoted years of my life to investigating NIH and other public health agencies precisely because they so deeply betrayed our trust during COVID. And I think sunlight is the best disinfectant, and transparency is necessary for us to hold wrongdoers accountable and begin to rebuild that trust. In this latest piece, I profiled the familial ties between Rep. Jake Auchincloss and this corrupt status quo in science and medicine that we have today. Auchincloss came across my radar when this monologue he gave at an Energy and Commerce Committee hearing went viral, in which he defended unchecked NIH funding with little oversight from Congress or the executive branch via DOGE, because to hear him tell it, sometimes research that leads to silly places can eventually result in a breakthrough. But Auchincloss has this major elephant in the room, conflict of interest. His father, Hugh Auchincloss, was Anthony Fauci's number two right hand at the NIH for nearly two decades. And the elder Auchincloss was among the first people that Fauci contacted within hours of learning that the genome of COVID bore signatures of lab engineering, and that his institute had underwritten coronavirus engineering projects at the pandemic's epicenter at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Fauci wrote to the elder Auchincloss, Jake Auchincloss's father, at 1 a.m. and said that he had tasks that must be done. And when the elder Auchincloss was asked by congressional investigators years later what those tasks were, he said he couldn't recall. But it is clear that the elder Auchincloss was tasked with investigating whether the gain-of-function research that was exported by Fauci's institute had undergone the proper checks through what's called the Potential Pandemic Pathogen Committee, that is supposed to review the riskiest gain-of-function research. And it soon became clear to Hugh Auchincloss, Jake's dad, and to Fauci that it hadn't gone through the proper checks. And I think that might contribute to the fact that Fauci, for years, even under oath, denied the idea that this was gain-of-function research, even though it was referred to internally at NIH as gain-of-function research. And that's not where Rep. Jake Auchincloss's conflicts of interest end with the NIH. His mother, Lori Glimcher, was the CEO of the world-famous Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, until it was discovered that many of the leaders of that institute, including Glimcher herself, had co-authored papers with apparent image manipulations and duplications. And sleuths who uncover scientific misconduct often say that these sorts of manipulations often indicate scientific fraud. These papers, including the ones co-written by Glimcher, Jake Auchincloss's mother, were underwritten by our taxpayer funding via NIH and have been cited thousands of times, sometimes for 20 years, before the fraud was exposed and the papers were corrected or retracted. So it's really no surprise that Rep. Auchincloss would defend the corrupt status quo at the NIH. It served his family very well, and it served him personally very well, as his parents have donated around $200,000 to his various campaigns.
And so in this one, you know, great job as you tie this together. And I know that it's the Auchincloss and the mother and the brother. And so this is why I love the Daily Caller. And I love your work, Emily Kopp. You can follow her, by the way, at Emily A. Kopp. But you tie together the fact that, for example, there's some criticism, as you point out, of Elon Musk and Doge, and that it's one and the same person. And so you weave this together very artfully in your piece, your most recent and all your pieces, but weaving together the politics behind some of this and where these individuals stand. And this by the same people that often say, well, the science should never be politicized or weaponized politically. And so can you talk to that as far as who was criticizing Doge and in particular Elon Musk?
Yeah, I mean, I think we see a lot of highfalutin language in the media right now about how important the work is at NIH. And of course, much of it is very important and critical. But there are also really perverse incentives at NIH that tend to reward insiders who uphold the status quo. You know, we saw that during the pandemic because there were these cults of personalities around Fauci and even NIH Director Francis Collins, and anyone who deviated from the top-down narrative about infectious diseases or about where the pandemic came from really didn't have any leeway to speak their mind. And that's not what we want among our nation's top scientists. We want them to be able to freely debate important issues. And so a lot of the NIH funding tends to go towards a single hypothesis within a discipline, doesn't go to people who challenge that hypothesis. And
which is the basis of science, right?
Absolutely.
That's what it's all about.
On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake. To find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, real quick here, let me just hold that thought for 1 second. Dan has a good example of Auchincloss speaking.
I represent Massachusetts. We do healthcare. And in the last week alone, I've spoken to a physician at the Veterans Affairs Agency in Boston, where they are facing drastic cuts that will affect care for veterans, psychological and physical. I've spoken to a pediatric oncologist who's scrambling with telehealth issues for her patients who are children. I've spoken to Medicaid experts here in the state who are deeply concerned about cuts to at-home care should the Medicaid cuts go through Congress. The federal government, it's not Twitter, right? You can't move fast and break things and all that ends up getting scrambled is software code. This is real people's lives. This is veterans. This is children who are sick. This is our senior citizens who need at-home care. And the approach that Elon Musk is taking is cruel and it's counterproductive, because had they tried to work with Democrats, we also want to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. I can give them a list of priorities at the Department of Defense, okay, for example, and elsewhere, that we could have sat down in good faith and hammered through. But,
this approach
challenges the constitutional separation of powers, and it makes people's lives more expensive and less healthy.
So, you know, I just am curious what your reaction is to that comment. Maybe you find it rich. What do you think about, you know, Auchincloss making that comment?
I think the congressman needs to look in the mirror. He wouldn't have a political career if it wasn't for his parents giving him $200,000 for his various campaigns. And some much of that money was underwritten through taxpayer dollars via the NIH. Some of it went to fraud, apparent fraud, via his mother's cancer research. He says that what Doge is doing is cruel, but what's cruel is to allow unchecked corruption in our federal government that delays cures to cancer because we have egomaniacs like his mother who defraud the American taxpayers and who put out fake research papers that delay any progress on cancer research. Another good example of this is in Alzheimer's research. Mm-hmm. We've devoted billions of dollars in 20 years to a hypothesis around amyloid plaques that turned out to be in large part fraudulent based on papers that are only 20 years later being retracted. So what Democrats like Auchincloss are calling for is just funnel, you know, all of this money to our federal agencies with very little oversight, and eventually we'll get a cure for cancer. That's not how it works. We need to root out the fraud. And again, he would not have a political career if it wasn't for the very systems of fraud and perverse incentives that our nation's public health agencies, namely NIH. So it's just a massive conflict of interest. I think Democrats, if they want to make this point, should put out a better spokesperson than Fauci's number two's son.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at this, Emily, what do you think as far as this administration investigations, some of them bipartisan, hopefully moving forward, but how do we, you know, root out this distrust and root out that kind of fraud? And are you seeing a change with the change of administration as far as exposing the fraud and then step two, dealing with this to make sure that no administration can be involved in this again?
I'm optimistic. I mean, we have in Jay Bhattacharya someone at the head of NIH now who has condemned during his confirmation hearing the deliberate suppression of the lab leak theory, for example, and the way that virologists who had a professional stake in diverting attention away from the Wuhan Institute of Virology because they had collaborated with the Wuhan Institute of Virology or were writing papers in collaboration with Fauci. To divert attention away from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. You know, the way that those virologists misled millions of people, that's something that he has said is a disgrace. And so, you know, RFK obviously has said similar things. So I think you have people in leadership in this administration who are devoted to transparency and to uncovering what went wrong with COVID so that we can reestablish trust. And I think it remains to be seen whether they make good on those promises. And I certainly intend to hold them to account if there isn't greater transparency. But yeah, I'm optimistic.
Do you have any updates on what you, I know you had reported on this and talked about this a couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago, on DEFUSE, diffuse, and what you called a blueprint for the creation of COVID, and, you know, talked about this risky virology that was supposed to take place in the States. And I know that you had reported on that and some of the coding and code words. And any update on that at all, Emily?
Oh, you're in the weeds on this issue.
I know.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, I love it. Yeah, so the diffuse proposal was a grant proposal submitted to DARPA in 2018 by this organization called Eco Health Alliance, which served as a conduit, an intermediary between NIH and the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and this University of North Carolina virologist named Ralph Baird, who is probably the world's leading expert on cutting-edge coronavirus engineering work. And what they proposed is inserting fear and cleavage sites at the S1, S2 boundary of spike proteins of SARS-related coronaviruses that have spike proteins approximately 20% different than that of SARS. So the idea was that they were trying to find the next SARS virus, SARS 2.0, What happens, you know, a year and a half later, SARS-CoV-2, which sounds a lot like SARS 2.0, emerges from Wuhan, the very lab where they were going to subcontract this work, and it has a spike protein approximately 20% difference in SARS, and it has a serine cleavage site at the S1, S2 boundary. So what some scientists say is that if you had patented what was described in this research proposal, SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, would infringe upon that patent. And what I helped uncover via FOIA is that the researchers who were doing this work in the margins of the drafts of this grant proposal had said, we're going to downplay the involvement of China because we don't want to spook the Pentagon, who were their intended funders, and we might be growing these unpredictable novel coronaviruses in a relatively high level of biosecurity in the U.S., but they'll be growing them in a relatively low biosecurity level in China, but we shouldn't tell our Pentagon funders. So they were exporting this very high-risk work that very closely matches the SARS-CoV-2 genome in Wuhan. And so a lot of us have questions about that grant proposal, why the researchers didn't freely disclose it, why it had to be leaked by a whistleblower, and then why I had to kind of submit a FOIA request for more documents further illustrating this grant proposal. And the head of EcoHealth Alliance, Peter Daszak, who is now debarred from federal funding because the U.S. government, even under Biden, thought this guy is not a trustworthy steward of taxpayer dollars. He assured us for years that the work described in this proposal was set to be done in the U.S. under a high biosafety level, and the records that I uncovered revealed that to be not true. They intended to mislead the Pentagon and to export it to Wuhan at a low biosafety level. You know, you're savvy and you know these things, but the degree to which this information has reached the broader American public, I'm not totally sure. But I think it's necessary in order for us to get accountability, get transparency, and once again, rebuild trust in our health institutions.
How much did it mean to you, Emily Kopp, that the New York Times, you know, huge opinion page, we were badly misled about the event that changed our lives? How much did that piece mean to you in the New York friggin' Times, as we say?
Yeah, it's always, I mean, great to see my work cited in the New York Times, however belatedly. I think this op-ed over the weekend acknowledged the reality that many of us have been privy to for years, that many of our trusted messengers, the public health leaders and virologists who we put our faith in when the pandemic first emerged and we knew very little about infectious diseases or R-naught or serine cleavage sites, those trusted messengers betrayed our trust. And I give the op-ed writer major credit in that she doesn't say, oh, the science evolved on the lab leak theory. She accurately says, citing some of my reporting, that we were deliberately misled by the people who had a professional stake in the high-risk coronavirus virology that was going on in Wuhan. And they tried to keep that research a secret, and when they couldn't keep it a secret, they stigmatized any discussion of it as a crank conspiracy theory, smeared journalists and even members of Congress, like Senator Tom Cotton, who took it seriously. And I think it's only through the dedication of a select group of researchers that the New York Times is belatedly acknowledging we were lied to. And so, it's really validating. I think better late than never. So.
Amen. Well, listen, I hope that you come back and we continue the conversation. A lot of people on social media, Emily, saying you deserve a Pulitzer. I agree. You know, and maybe we pull the Pulitzer away from, you know, New York Times, among others. But I believe that you deserve that. You've done incredible work. And as somebody who went to journalism school and I tried it, my youngest son in high school, he wants to be a journalist. And I think you give us all faith that true investigative journalist is not dead. It's just evolving. And so thank you for your great work, Emily A. Kopp. Really appreciate you.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.